This episode features discussions and descriptions of suicide, parental abuse, anorexia, child death, and the transatlantic slave trade. Listener discretion is advised, especially for children under 13. Being the groundskeeper for a closed mausoleum was a thankless job. No one ever came to visit, so no one got to see the impressive work Daniel did maintaining the place. And then, there are the rumors in town to deal with. The after-hour visitors trying to sneak a peek. It seemed that everyone on the island wanted to know if the coffins moved inside the Chase Vault. Daniel had never seen the coffins, but he had heard them. As he tended to the surrounding grass just after sundown, he could hear the stones and spirits moving around the room, a scratching of the coral floor, and a strange screaming on the wind. It didn't bother him much, as they seemed to keep to themselves, and the pay was good, so he kept his mouth shut. Tonight, however, the rattling was louder than usual, more than a gentle scrape. It was like a shudder in a hurricane. A particularly loud rattle made him jump in fright. He took a few steps backward. The ground was beginning to shake. He heard a crash and an unearthly high-pitched screech. Something wanted out. Badly. The door surged forward and back, forward and back. Then they swung outward, shattering the lock. A thick, foul smell seeped into the air. Daniel covered his nose and mouth, gagging at the pungent odor. A strangled noise got stuck in his throat as a corpse crawled out of the once-sealed mausoleum, heading straight towards him. Welcome to Haunted Places, a Parcast original. I'm Greg Polson. Every Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted real places on Earth. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to the Chase Vault on the island of Barbados, home to a group of 19th century coffins that can be heard switching places on dark tropical nights, and discover why, to this day, it's haunted. You can find episodes of Haunted Places and other Parcast originals for free on Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Haunted Places for free on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Haunted Places in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast, and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. Christ Church Barbados is one of the 6 parishes established by the island colony's first Western governor, Sir William Tufton, in 1629. The southwest coastal area has scenic views where the waters brush softly against the land. But the picturesque surroundings conceal a dark story of social and ecological devastation. The indigenous communities of Barbados have always cultivated sugar for rum and feedstock, but it quickly became a lucrative export for white settlers. Struggling to keep up with demands, they abandoned the practice of hiring indentured servants and instead trafficked in slaves from West Africa. By the 1800s, Barbados was home to more than 385,000 African slaves. Traffickers and slave owners used forced reproduction in order to reduce costs, eventually making Barbados the only British Caribbean island that didn't need to import slaves. This growing sugar trade and lowered production costs led to an explosion of wealth among white settlers. They quickly sought ways to demonstrate their newfound power and influence. For Colonel Thomas Chase, that included the purchase of a burial vault for his family. Constructed and carved from hard coral, the underground vault was built in the Christ Church Parish Cemetery during the early 1700s by the Waldron family, but it sat vacant for nearly a century. In 1807, Mrs. Thomasina Goddard became the first person to be laid to rest inside the vault. Soon after, the vault was sold to the Chase family. They left Mrs. Goddard's remains inside, out of respect, and added one of Colonel Chase's own daughters, Anna Maria Chase, in 1808. 4 years later, her sister Dorcas would join her. When her father joined them a few months later, in 1812, a very strange sight greeted the mourners. The coffins had moved around. No matter how many times masons and workers stacked them in an orderly manner and walled them up within the crypt, the heavy lead boxes would be strewn about the room, bodies peering out eerily from resting places that had been nailed shut. This inexplicable phenomena has consumed supernatural researchers for over two centuries, but there's one element they all agree on. The Chase family's secrets were even darker than the confined chamber where their restless coffins were kept. Dorcas's final meal on Earth had been roast pig. If she closed her eyes, she could still feel the sweet, stringy meat melting on her tongue. The air would fill with that sweet, salty, perfect smell. Her bedroom would transform into the dining room. The last few scrapings of mashed potatoes would smile at her from her plate. She held onto the memory tightly as her body wasted away. It had been a delicious last meal. Her father, Colonel Chase, had never taken her seriously. He had not heaped her with praise like her toddling sister, dear departed Marianne. He only needed to look at Dorcas for vile words to spill out. They were as necessary to him as the air he breathed. It seemed to be a compulsion. She existed, so she must be punished. For 18 years, Dorcas had prayed to God for an explanation. She asked her mother for an answer, but her mother could do little to soothe her. She explained that the colonel was a difficult man to love. He delighted in violence and control in a way few men do. Her mother had clutched the banister as she told Dorcas this, her knuckles turning white. She had to love the colonel. There was no other option for her on this plantation. Colonel Chase was the son, and his family's duty was to revolve around him. When she reached a certain age, his harsh words were replaced with his fists. He would hit Dorcas in the stomach until she bled. Giant bruises bloomed over her abdomen, like the darkest of flowers. And as the flowers grew larger and larger, deeper and deeper, Dorcas decided that she was done revolving. She was going to drop out of orbit instead. Her timing was deliberate. Her father was going away on business for exactly 2 weeks. She had supped with him at his farewell dinner, demure and silent, the ideal picture of an obedient daughter. Still, he used his fists on her again. She smiled through the pain. It was easy to smile now that she had a plan. Colonel Chase wanted nothing more than to be seen as an important man, like the neighboring Waldrons. His reputation was his life, and nothing soiled a reputation faster than the sudden death of a perfectly healthy woman of marriageable age. The family would be cloaked in scandal and rumor. Best of all, Dorcas would finally have the peace and silence that she had always wanted. He was coming home today, and she could already feel her body failing her. She feared the pain he would inflict, but some small part of her felt joy. He would see what he'd done. He would see her final triumph. Wasting away was the easiest thing she'd ever done. She didn't eat. She didn't drink. She didn't speak. She acted as though she were already dead, and in a way, she was. Her skin had grown waxy and sallow. Her long brown hair was falling out in clumps. She was no longer anyone's definition of beauty, and that suited her quite well. Despite the heat of the island sun, Dorcas only breathed winter air. ice creeping through her lungs and over her skin. When she walked, her body shook with the feeling of cool water spilling over her head and down her limbs. Her sense of balance ebbed and flowed with the current. On one occasion, Dorcas had simply fallen to the floor. Her body could no longer bear the weight of living. The ground called her. It sang in her ears at night, asking her to make a warm blanket from layers of sand and dirt. She would simply become part of the earth. It was sorely tempting. From a spot by the window, she stared out at the shore. She could picture driving her hands into the sand, deeper and deeper, until it covered her. The fractured flashes of lightning and shards of shell wearing away what remained of her skin. If only she could get up and do it. Her desire to sink into the earth, to be ground down by time like sea glass on the shore, would have to stay latched to her chest, an unattainable fantasy. The only sign of her body's attempt to heal was the slow change of the bruises. As the days creeped by, her father's last marks of ownership on her transformed from dark purple to yellow-green. The house servants fretted, but they did nothing, even the ones who had raised her. They'd never interfered. She didn't expect them to. Her mother watched her dying with a detached expression of awe, maybe even respect. At least someone was escaping. Several days in, the pangs had started. The bruises had taken root under her skin and began to pull whatever nutrients were left from her body. She could feel them digging deep, giant thorns and twisting roots slicing through and consuming her insides. There were days when the pain made the entire world fall out of focus. Salt would build up in her eyes, with no moisture to form into tears. She would claw at the skin on her face, and the salt would linger, seeping into new wounds. Today, the pain was a reminder. Soon she would be free. In a handful of hours, everything would be gone. The Colonel made his grand entrance through the house. Even though she was in the upstairs parlor, she could hear his stomping boots against the wood floors on the lower level. He yelled at his attendants to remove his shoes and coat for him. Dorcas waited. She strained her ears to listen as he moved about the house. He greeted his wife. He didn't ask where his eldest daughter was. Perhaps she was already a ghost to him. Hours passed slowly. Her eyes were growing heavy with sleep. Death was on the horizon for her. The boat was already skimming the shores. Then, the Colonel made his appearance. He slapped her awake. She took satisfaction in the way he wiped his palm. Oil had been coating her skin for the past week. Now, there was a part of her sinking into his skin. She hoped it would fester there, eating away at him. His face grew a boiling red as he screamed at her for being selfish and ungrateful. Dorcas's eyelids grew heavy. She was dreadfully tired. Tremors shook her body. She slowly realized it wasn't the cold. It was her father shaking her again and again. He wanted her to wake up. She did try. She needed to see him. She needed to watch him as he realized she had won. Her eyelids strained to open against the weights on her lashes. Suddenly, she slipped out of arms and down to the ground. Her vision finally returned, coming to a sharp, clear focus. He looked like a storm above her, full of electricity and anger. His voice boomed around the room. And then he was moving fast, faster than he should, his face mere inches from her own, screaming, cursing, shaking her over and over again. Dorcas's body tensed. She knew more pain was coming. His eyes drifted down to the spot where the wounds had taken root. Her stomach was empty, but her belly looked full, swollen with the last signs of starvation. The Colonel punched at her bruises again and again. The flowers grew again, in dark purple bursts. He raised his voice at her as he brought his hands down. It was too much. Salt pricked at her eyes. The fear had returned. She gasped for air. He kept up his tirade. Her hands reached for purchase on something, anything, that could save her from his reach. He pulled away. She was afraid of what would come next. Her heart raced like a thundering herd of horses. Dorcas dug at the floor. Her arms began to tingle. Pressure built in her chest. She called for help. She begged for someone to make it all stop. And then, mercifully, it did. Dorcas Chase, the oldest daughter of Colonel Thomas Chase, was laid to rest in the family vault on July 6, 1812. Colonel Chase was a violent slave owner and domestic abuser, with his eldest child as his favorite target. Left without any means of escape, thanks to both her geographical isolation and her father's financial control of her, she took the only way out she could, by starving herself to death. Colonel Chase would kill himself a month later. He left no note, but the rumors that swirled around the family as a result of Dorcas's last act of defiance were likely a key factor. Chase was to be interred on August 9th, 1812. But when they opened the vault, the church rector and cemetery workers were stunned. Both Marianne and Dorcas's heavy coffins had been disturbed, lying on the floor in total disarray. Unnerved, they righted all the coffins and quickly closed the vault. In 1816, the mausoleum was reopened for another burial. It happened again. The church rector recorded that each time the vault was open, the coffins would be found in great confusion. This would continue until its final sealing in 1820. Even after it was sealed, rumors circulated around the town that the heavy lead boxes could be heard scraping across the ground at night. It's never been clear if these sounds were the dead trying to escape or simply trying to create enough noise that someone might be tempted to step inside. Up next, we'll follow another dark chapter in the curious story of the Chase family. Now, back to the story. After Dorcas Chase's death in July of 1812, life in Christchurch, Barbados continued as normal. The horrors of Dorcas's life remained only rumors among the townsfolk. And the coffins kept moving, as if waiting to share the Chase's true nature to anyone who would come down to listen. But there's more than one way to reveal a family secret. Honoria wasn't there when her cousin Dorcas died. Dorcas had written her several letters, pleading for help to escape her father. Honoria had promised to visit. But when she arrived on the shores of Barbados, her cousin was already dead and buried. Colonel Chase claimed his daughter had suffered from a sudden wasting disease, but Honoria refused to believe it. Dorcas had never been sick, even when the whole household was racked with fever. Something was wrong, and Honoria was going to discover the truth. Both her family and servants offered to walk her to the mausoleum, but she needed to do it on her own. She had made a promise to her cousin and failed. She owed Dorcas a proper memorial and penance before she would set out to find vengeance. The rain was melting the dirt road, turning it into sludge. Each step required more effort than usual as her slippers sank into the mud. Mud caked on the hem of her dress. Her driver suggested it might be best to come back another day. She ignored him. In the distance, she heard stone scraping against stone. A peculiar sound on a dreary day, far away from the work in the fields. The gray mausoleum came into view. Its size was foreboding, jutting out of the ground like a rock of ages. Her muscles tensed, and tears came to her eyes. The cousin she loved so dearly was now encased in stone, shut off from the rest of the world. She would never feel the rain against her skin or the wind on her face. She was gone. Honoria heard a strange thump below, and then a cold sensation seeped up her legs. Honoria was sinking. The mud was swallowing her. Her shoes vanished into the churning brown muck as an unseen force dragged her down. She kicked and pulled upwards, but the mud pulled right back. Honoria called for help as her body slowly sank, inch by torturous inch. She fought her panic as her driver ran towards her. He took her in his arms and wrenched her free of the thick, viscous earth. He set her on the stable sand beside the fence and looped her arm around his. He would not let go of her until they reached the safety of the house. Honoria was too rattled to protest. She had lost her bid at independence. From now on, if she wanted to visit the site of Dorcas's resting place, she would have to do so with an escort. She would be closely monitored in the house, as Colonel Chase had suspicions about her judgment. Yet these limitations only strengthened her resolve. While maids fussed over her, Honoria thought back to the mud. It had held her so tightly, like an embrace. The stone had been so loud, calling almost, crying. Exhaustion sank into her bones, like a till digging into the earth. She longed for a bed and a few hours' rest, but the mud was caked on her legs, making it hard to walk. A maid drew up a bath to help her escape the plaster-like cast over her limbs. Her legs burned as she lowered herself into the hot water. The mud fell away, exposing red and swollen flesh beneath. Jagged, claw-like marks slid down her limbs where the mud had been. Honoria closed her eyes, resting her neck against the lip of the clawfoot tub. A shaky sigh left her lips. She was inside. She was safe again. Rain pounded against the windows. She turned her head to examine the storm outside. There was a woman in the distance, a shadow through the pouring rain. Her skin looked sallow, almost transparent. She was so small, a waif in clothes so loose they looked like a shroud. Some part of Honoria knew, deep inside, that it was Dorcas. But before she could call out or look closer, the figure was gone, swallowed by the torrential downpour. A chunk of stone broke through the window. Honoria tried to sit up in the tub to look at the stone, but her body would not respond. She felt it tense and freeze, a strange sensation spreading through her limbs. Her skin cooled and hardened, growing still and cold as stone. Honoria felt the stone climbing up her shoulders and towards her neck. She screamed for help. Her vocal cords were solidifying. The scrape of stone against stone was coming from her own mouth now. The maid came back in. She screamed in shock. The porcelain pitcher she had been carrying fell and shattered. Honoria stared at her, her head frozen in place as granite climbed up her skull. She could feel the rush of the ocean in her ears, as if she'd been swallowed by the sea. She was cold. The rain was pelting her in the face. She shivered, her feet slick on the ground. The ground? Honoria looked around herself. Her surroundings had transformed around her. She wasn't in the bath. She was outside. She felt a towel close around her. The maid rubbed her shivering limbs, trying to restore some feeling. She looked back towards the house. The window in the main bathroom had been broken. Her own hands were crusted with mud and small rocks. Her fingernails were broken and torn off in some places. Honoria screamed. Then she fell unconscious. Her aunt told her the story in pieces, not wanting to overwhelm her too much. At some point, Honoria had broken through the window. She'd wandered towards the mausoleum. Honoria had torn at the stone with her hands. When that didn't work, she'd picked up branches and other pieces of stone. She climbed to the top of the mausoleum and lifted the stone over her head, bringing it down over and over again. The maid had found her staggering back towards the house. Honoria wanted to accept the explanation, but something was bothering her. The shards of glass from the broken window were on the inside of the house, not on the terrace. There were deep scratches on the porcelain floors, as if great stones had moved across them. She pointed these things out, but her aunt wouldn't listen to her. No one would. So, Honoria trudged upstairs to her room. She wiped aloe on her cuts and scrapes, trying to take solace in the small markers of civilization. The wooden floor and massive bed frame, soft sheets and beautiful floral patterns. She was alive. She was safe. The floorboards started to shift as the light touched them. The color slowly drained from the room around her, a gray wave spreading across the walls. Honoria lifted her fingers to the plaster. At even the softest touch, they turned to stone. She pulled her hand back quickly. The room began to shrink. Somehow, she'd moved from the safety of the large house with its broad open windows and soft wood to a hard, small space with stone boxes. Honoria was inside the mausoleum itself. The stone door was wide open behind her, casting ambient moonlight into the tomb. One of the heavy coffin lids lifted up. Dirt-crusted fingernails slid through the gap, scraping along the lead. The bony fingers gripped tight as a dark shape rose, throwing the heavy lid aside completely. The bloated and blue body of Dorcas climbed up, toppling forward and then sliding towards her cousin's feet. Dorcas tried to pull her body up, but her legs were too decayed to sustain her weight. She collapsed again. Horrified, Honoria bent to the ground and helped her dear cousin up. Dorcas smiled at her sweetly, serenely. "So glad you could join me," she said. As the stone door slid shut again, all light and all wind left, leaving only the scraping of lead on stone. Supernatural experts, folklorists, and even the chase's own contemporaries have theories to explain the mysterious moving coffins of Barbados. An earthquake could create enough force to knock the lead coffins from their resting places. However, earthquakes are not particularly common in Barbados or the Caribbean at large, and there were no recorded quakes or resulting tsunamis in the summer of 1812. Even if the earthquake simply wasn't recorded, it's unlikely that a tremor would have only hit the area next to the church. The area could have flooded. The rising water levels could have pushed the coffins up and moved them around. Then, when the water lowered, the coffins would settle into different positions. But no one could find any evidence of lingering moisture or water damage in the space. A fine layer of sand was dusted over the entrance to help detect any robbers attempting to enter the mausoleum. But the sand was undisturbed, and all of the deceased's valuables remained in place. On an island with such large economic disparities, it was hard to imagine why someone would break in but not take anything from the bodies. The locals, however, had a much different interpretation of events than the white colonizers who had forcibly taken their island. Both Dorcas and Colonel Thomas Chase eventually committed suicide, Many locals believe that this was the true reason for the moving coffins. The other bodies didn't want to be next to those who had perished by their own hand and were trying to force the coffins out of the tomb. It was one last painful injustice. Dorcas still could not find safety or understanding in death. Coming up, a man of God seeks to free the spirits in the chase vault of their burdens. But who will free him when he realizes he's locked inside? Now, the conclusion of our story. It's important to note that while the chase vault was a very expensive family plot, it stood in a town cemetery. The shifting of the chase coffins was well documented, especially for an early 19th century colonial event, because the phenomena was happening right below the feet of the townsfolk. Many citizens of Christ Church tried to view the strangeness as a local oddity, nothing more, but others sought to help, to understand. But the restless dead do not wish to be comprehended. They only wish to be heard, and sometimes joined. Church rector Thomas H. Orderson normally took great pride in his work. He calmed the fears of his congregation regarding storms and famine. He spread the word of the Lord throughout the islands. He baptized newborns and shepherded departed souls to heaven. There were far worse places to do the Lord's work. Thomas found the beaches and balmy Barbados sun to his liking. He felt grateful that God had chosen him for this task. Or at least he had, before he performed the service for Colonel Chase, before the coffins had begun to move. His parish had been faced with a challenge from beyond the grave. It was his duty, his purpose in life, to rise above this obstacle and soothe his flock. Yet he found himself troubled. Two suicides, two souls that had been cast into limbo. It was a tragedy, but these particular deaths had larger consequences. The slaves on the island believed that those who struggled to find peace in life would be denied peace in death. Those who had died by suicide would be cast out by other spirits. He had given no credence to such a pagan notion, but the coffins had moved repeatedly, audibly. Bodies had been tossed to the ground like rotten fruit in a sealed room. He could think of no godly explanation, and so he began to investigate the potential work of the devil. He'd seen the coffins himself during another burial. The tops had been thrown from several of them. A small child's corpse, half decomposed, lay on the floor. With its patchy skin and green color, it looked more like a discarded plaything than a former person. Thomas had gently raised the child's body to his chest. Part of the little boy's leg crumbled in his hands. Time had worn the bones down to paper. There was another corpse on the floor. The flesh had been plucked away, leaving large spots of bare bone. He couldn't identify the gender or age of this lost soul. There were no personal markings left, just a husk. Thomas began his investigation shortly after nightfall. He sat on the vault's cold floor, next to the two corpses. Thomas prayed for their salvation. He prayed for himself to find a way to help these people. Something grazed the nape of his neck, sending a shiver down his spine. It felt like a fingernail pushing into his skin. He jumped up and whirled around. No one was behind him. Only one of the heavy coffins sitting still. Thomas rubbed the back of his neck. His fingers came away with a spot of red on them. Blood. He told himself that he had only put his head back too far and cut himself on the jagged lid. He resumed his blessing, taking it a bit too fast. When he returned home, Thomas prayed for God to keep him safe from any that might do him harm. Thomas had just drifted off to sleep when it started. A thumping, deep and rhythmic. He stayed in his bed, waiting for the sound to die off. Instead, it grew louder. When he could take it no more, Thomas tossed the covers aside and went rooting around his small residence. There was no stranger at his doorstep, no mice pattering across the floorboards, no gusts of wind hitting his shutters. He searched the house for loose books or baubles that might be knocking around the cupboards. Again, he came up empty. In a fit of frustration, Thomas even knelt down by the floorboards to listen to the earth. But it wasn't the ground. The sound seemed to be moving. His eyes started to water. His limbs grew heavy. He was beyond exhausted. Without proper sleep, Thomas would never be able to deliver his 5 a.m. sermon with the vigor it demanded. He leaned back against the wall and closed his eyes. When the sound finally stopped, his heartbeat took over. The same staccato rhythm pulsing through his body. As he gave his sermon that morning, he could hear the noise racing around his skull. Let us out. Get them out. There was something in that tomb. It had been waiting. He had tempted the devil, and the devil had answered back in the form of a pagan legend in order to taunt him. Thomas spent the day in his office. He tried to write his sermons, but each stroke of the pen sounded like a heavy thump of stone. A vein in his forehead bulged at the sound. He was in agony and would have no peace, physical or spiritual, until these spirits were freed. The noise escalated as he stepped outside. He crossed the graveyard to the Chase family vault, the site of his many woes. He had prayed inside, and the wrong thing had hurt him. He could fix this. He just needed to enter the belly of the beast once again. The door to the vault was closed firmly. He could hear voices whispering on the other side of it. They were mocking him. He didn't know if they were devils or spirits or something in between, but he did know that he could not let them win. He crossed himself and then opened the vault. Silence. It had been hours since he'd been able to sit in the stillness. Coffins laid on the ground, open again. Dorcas and Colonel Chase's bodies looked almost serene. He said a prayer for their souls. Thomas turned to the walls. He called for forgiveness, for darkness to be cast out and all sins forgiven in the name of their Lord and Savior. It worked. He laughed with relief. The Lord's power had been enough. He felt a weight lifting from his body. He had fought the devil and won. From the top of the vault came a rumbling, soft at first, but building. Thomas pulled back towards the entrance. The mausoleum shook. He collapsed to the ground beside one of the heavy coffins. He didn't see it rolling down onto him until it was too late. The last opening of the Chase Vault occurred on April 18, 1820. After several complaints that there was a sound coming from inside the mausoleum, Governor of the island, Lord Combermere, decided to investigate the site for himself. Aided by two other high-ranking men, Lord Combermere descended upon the tomb. Inside, the coffins had been shuffled around once more. This was perplexing for two reasons. One, because the coffins were made of lead and required six men to carry them into place, and two, because masons had carefully sealed the tomb in 1819. Before sealing the entrance shut, the masons had ensured that the coffins had all been restored to their proper positions within the mausoleum. After the opening in 1820, Lord Combermere declared that the mausoleum itself should be sealed permanently. The coffins were buried in the ground beside the tomb and have stayed in place ever since. The vault was never opened again. Did the separate burials of the Chase family end their problems in the afterlife? It's possible. Dorcas and Colonel Chase were moved out of the vault and buried separately, stacked on top of each other. Even in death, Dorcas could not escape her father. But there's an even darker question to contemplate here. The Chase family was known for their cruelty. They were said to be some of the most vicious slave owners on the island of Barbados, and Dorcas's father reveled in torturing his own family. Perhaps another source saw fit to mete out its own form of justice. It denied the family their desired resting place, one that had been purchased with blood money. Instead, they would be buried in the ground like everyone else. Our family histories never die with us, as much as we wish to hide our secrets. They leave stains on the land, eerie pockets of pain and suffering. The Chase Vault is surrounded by one of the most beautiful environments in the world, and yet standing beside it is said to make the blood run cold, even in the warm Caribbean breeze. So when the sounds of lead on coral drown out the white-capped waves, be wary. It might be you the spirits cast out next. Thanks again for tuning into Haunted Places. We'll be back on Thursday with a new episode. For more information on the mysterious moving coffins of Barbados, amongst the many sources we used, we found the December 1907 issue of Folklore extremely helpful to our research. You can find more episodes of Haunted Places and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all your favorite music, but now, Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all your favorite Parcast originals, like Haunted Places, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Haunted Places on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Haunted Places in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next time. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, with sound design by Kenny Hobbs. Production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Maggie Admire, and Travis Clark. This episode of Haunted Places was written by Lil DeRitter and Jennifer Richey. I'm Greg Polson.